Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I don't even know where to go from here with this music, but that's fine. Don't worry about it, Danny. This is probably just the backup song if the entire system crashes, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
It's the Godzilla theme.
You know what? I'll be honest with you. If you gave me 1,000 guesses, I wouldn't be able to tell you. See, it's just as shameful as not seeing D2, the Mighty Ducks are back. See, that we're even now. Anyway, sorry about that if I can't tell you anything about that movie. Anyway, Kevin Rogers with you till what time? 10 o'clock? Lead you up to Pharrell. FSU and Texas Tech tied at 1 in the 5th of the College World Series. And we have a lot of drafts coming up. The NBA draft is tomorrow. The NHL draft is Friday. So we'll be seeing a lot of young people get selected coming up in the next few days. A man who's also young at heart, that being Randy Moeller, of course, the Florida Panthers television broadcast, along with Steve Goldstein and Denny Potvin, joining us here on 560 WQAM. Randy, good evening. How are you?
Hey, Raj. It's always a pleasure to be on the airwaves with you. I am almost as far away from you right now that you could ever imagine. I'm in a place called Victoria, Vancouver Island, which is about 24 nautical miles away from Vancouver, where the draft will be. My mother lives over here in a place called Sydney, Sydney by the Sea. So when you get off the ferry from Vancouver over here to Victoria, this is the little town, and I'm actually standing outside here, and I'm looking towards Vancouver right now, and it's a beautiful evening, about 63 degrees.
Randy, I maintain that the NHL draft is probably the most unique one out of all the major sports, simply because of the setup that you have in the NFL. The coaches and the GMs are all in a war room somewhere, and you're getting a phone call. And, you know, the NBA, it's kind of similar. But in the NHL, all the executives, all the coaches, they're all there on the floor, and everybody is right there, and you all go up on stage, and you introduce the player. There's just nothing really like it.
Yeah, it's really unique, and it is fun. And what we expect, and it's already started, but what we really expect here over the next 2 days before the draft starts Friday evening out here in Vancouver is, like when you mention that, when every team is on the floor, every general manager, 31 general managers are on the floor. They start making trades. They're trading like pirates on the floor, and they're talking, and phones are ringing and whatever, and it's so exciting. And Doug Plagans and I are going to be broadcasting live from the floor, and we're our vantage point, we're a little bit higher at the one end, and we can see all these general managers, and they start huddling around and getting together and talking about deals, trading up, trading down, including players. It's really exciting. So we're looking forward to broadcasting live here on 560.
What about you personally? When you were drafted by the Nordiques, what was that experience like when you went in the first round?
Well, my draft was at the Montreal Forum, the old Montreal Forum. And it was surreal. We were all upstanding or sitting up in the stands in the Louis Bowl, and your name. And I didn't know. I was told I was going to go anywhere between second overall and 18th overall. I ended up going 11th to the Quebec Nordiques. It's surreal. Your name is called. But I just wish, the one thing I wish, no regrets, but one thing I wish today, as you know, K-Raj, all these guys, all these young players that are especially going to be drafted in the first two rounds, they're there with their parents and their brothers and sisters and the girlfriend and grandma and grandpa and everybody. I didn't have my parents there, and that's one one kind of regret. I wish my parents were there when I got drafted. They would have been so excited and that. But it is it's a defining moment. Remember, these kids are getting drafted. Some of them are still 17 years old, and the oldest are 18. So this is a big stage for them, and it's the first stage for the gateway to the NHL.
Now, when you look at the Panthers, they draft 13th. I'm not going to ask you who they're going to pick because obviously there's a lot of different ways that this can go. But just the, I don't want to say the attitude, but what is it like now with Joel Quenneville running the show? Obviously, you know, Bob Bugner, you know, he did the best he could in the 2 years that he ran things, and there were some highlights here and there. But now with Joel Quenneville, who has won the Stanley Cup multiple times in Chicago, he's close with Dale Tallon. What's this vibe now with him as the head coach?
It just brings a sense of, it's almost like what I would use the comparison, K. Rogers, when you remember very well when Pat Riley came to the Miami Heat, everybody said, wow, there's a presence, there's a confidence, there's a respect, there's a success, everything. All of those boxes are checked off when Pat Riley came to the Heat. Same thing now with Joel Quenneville. He's second winningest coach in the history of the NHL. He's won 3 cups. He has so much success and respect around the NHL. His coaching style has been duplicated and everything, all of his philosophies and that. So when he steps into that locker room first day of training camp, the Panther players will know that he's the boss. He's not going anywhere. And it's going to be his way or the highway, and I'm really excited about it. I think this is the right tonic for this hockey club. Yeah, we can talk about what's going to happen in free agency, but remember, the Panthers still have the 6, 7, 8, 9 of those core players that are going to the success.
Randy Moeller of Florida Panthers joining us here on 560 WQAM, of course, on the TV side, does a great job with Steve Goldstein and Denny Potvin, former radio play-by-play man. Now Doug Plagans has that position. Doug and Randy will be broadcasting live in Vancouver Friday and Saturday for the 2019 NHL Draft. And, you know, one of the players that, you know, the cornerstone of this team, Randy, with Alexander Barkov, he won the Lady Byng Memorial Trophy tonight, pretty much in a landslide. Yeah. I mean, he just destroyed the competition. And for those that don't know, that it is the award for sportsmanship and gentlemanly conduct combined with a high standard of playing ability. We know what kind of player he is, but what about the second part, Randy, that we don't really see with the sportsmanship and the gentlemanly conduct with Barkov?
Well, he just goes about his business and he plays the game at a high integrity. He's not a dirty player. Every time he takes a penalty, and I don't know, K-Rodge, what did he take, 3 or maybe 4 minors this year? He had 8 minutes, and that he gets very upset about that because he wants to play the game without making what he calls mistakes. Mistakes are penalties. The one trophy, though, that I think he looks at, and there's no disrespect to the Lady Byng trophy for the sportsmanship, he wants that Selke. He wants the Selke trophy, and that's the one that really defines that you're one of the best two-way players in the NHL. And Patrice Bergeron is kind of monopolize that over the last couple of years, but Barkov is always considered one of the best two-way forward centermen in the NHL, and I really would hope that Barkov will win that Selke trophy within the next year or two to really solidify what kind of player and respect he has around the NHL.
We saw Jonathan Huberdeau, Randy, really break out this year. He had a tremendous season. Obviously, Barkov had a great season as well, but who's going to be that guy next year, you think, for this team that has been good for them but can really bust out?
Michael Matheson. Mike Matheson. And Panther fans that are listening right now, you know, and we're all in this together. There's no hiding. Mike Matheson is the best skater on the team by far, by a country mile. He is, besides Alexander Barkov, the most talented player on the team. But he's still learning the game. You saw flashes of Mike Matheson being a Norris Trophy-style defenseman that Mark Giordano just won for the Calgary Flames. And then you saw the mistakes, the giveaways, the undecided, the lack of confidence in that. Mark my words, Mike Matheson is going to be considered for a Norris Trophy. He's going to be an NHL player for a long time. Okay, let me throw a name out to you and Panther fans as well. Jay Bouwmeester. They almost rode Jay Bouwmeester out on a rail out of South Florida after he was drafted, what, second or third overall by the Florida Panthers because of the lack of success of the team. They didn't think he was good enough. Well, guess what? He just played his 20th year in the NHL, and he just won the Stanley Cup, and he's going to come back again. These talented defensemen that can carry the puck, lead the rush, come back, he's still learning the game. Mike Matheson has got a lot to learn, but he's got so much talent, K-Raj, and I think Joel Quenneville, the head coach, is the guy that's going to, the tonic that's going to take him to that next level, and that's what the Panthers need.
Randy, we've seen the last 2 years in the playoffs, Vegas come out of nowhere as an expansion team, and obviously we didn't realize how good they were, but they win the West, they lose to Washington, they still get to the Stanley Cup, and the St. Louis Blues, who were at the bottom of the Western Conference in early January, they go on an incredible run, they get in, we see four division champions get bounced in the first round, I'm not tying this to just the Panthers, but just in general, does it give these teams hope that say, okay, you're not Tampa Bay or you're not Pittsburgh, that if you can just get in the playoffs, you have a shot to go far?
Absolutely. You're right on, K-Rod. You're right on. And I know you watch every game. You're at every home game. You see the teams playing. All you need to do is get into the playoffs. And at the time of the playoffs, though, you have to be on that upswoop that you're ready and you're playing at a fairly high level. Goaltending, attention to detail, how you handle the physical grinding style of the playoffs. Those are three ingredients for a recipe for you to go long in the playoffs. And we saw that. You saw that with the Washington Capitals 2 years ago. They were big, strong, talented, and they had great goaltending. You saw it again this year with the St. Louis Blues, and you'll see it. Whoever wins the Stanley Cup next year, you'll see the same thing.
What worked with St. Louis? How do you think they put it all together after that terrible start? Because we know St. Louis is a perennial playoff team every year. That this isn't, I mean, no disrespect, this isn't Ottawa or a team that's like really in the dumps. They just had a bad start. They had a coaching change. But how did they put it all together for those few months in the playoffs?
I can remember we were on the road. I remember Goldie, Denny, and Plagans, and a bunch of us that traveled with the team and broadcast with the team. And I remember that the first part, it was after Christmas, first part of January, and we were all sitting around having a beverage, as you know, and we couldn't believe that the St. Louis Blues were at the bottom of the league. They were on what was it, January 2nd or 3rd, they were the worst team in the NHL. With the worst record at that time. But they also had the highest number of one-goal losses in the NHL. We couldn't believe it because they had the talent. And we knew that, and you could tell with the way their team was built, if things just swung their way just a little bit on each game, the differential and the difference from winning and losing the NHL is so microscopic as far as you just need a big save, you need a big power play goal. And sure enough, they went from the bottom, they got their goaltender, the young goaltender, and away they went. And they started winning, and they were the best road team in the NHL from January 5th until the end of the regular season. So they did it with skill, size, toughness, and goaltending. And you got to give Craig Berube, because I remember Craig Berube saying to a number of us when they came in, just said, I just got to get these guys to believe that they are the team to beat. They have the talent to be a playoff team. And, of course, a lot of people were laughing at them because they're at the bottom of the league. But look what happened. They're not laughing anymore.
Randy Moeller, Florida Panthers TV, always a great job. Been with the franchise forever, and great job representing them. He will be in Vancouver along with Doug Plagans Friday and Saturday for the NHL Draft. The award show tonight in Vegas. Then the show goes to Vancouver for Friday and Saturday, and the Panthers draft 13th.
You're joining us, right?
I will be there both days.
Yeah, you're going to be hosting. Yeah, that. You know what? folks, that just put a cherry right on the old cake. When QAM announced that K-Raj was going to be joining the Plagans and Moeller extravaganza, that just put it over the edge. So we look forward to it, K-Raj. We're going to have a lot of fun. There's going to be a lot of activity, and we're going to bring it to you as soon as it happens on the draft floor.
Absolutely looking forward to it. Randy, thanks so much. We'll talk to you Friday.
Okay, Raj, all the best.
Bye. All right, you got it. Randy Moeller joining us right there. He is in Vancouver. Beautiful Vancouver. I mean, that's a place I would like to visit. That is a gorgeous place from what I've heard. And Canada just celebrated its first NBA title. So things are going. They don't win NHL championships up there. They don't win Stanley Cups in Canada, but they win NBA championships. So figure that one out.
I was just blown away by the fact that I hadn't heard a Quebec Nordiques reference in a long time.
Matt Sundin, it's been a while. It's been a hot minute. All right, we take you up till 10 o'clock right here on 560 WQAM. Radio.com.
For the record, K-Rock.
I'm here, yeah.
This was the song I wanted to come in with.
That's fine. That's fair. Yeah, I had no idea what that was. I thought that was like 17th century Tchaikovsky something. I don't know what that was.
That would be more like 1950s Japanese cinema music.
When I watch Jeopardy and it's some kind of musical category like for classical, Bach is my go-to. Everything is Bach. Who is Bach? Who is Bach? That's always my go-to. And you know what? Once in a while, I hit it.
I've been watching Jeopardy for many years, and I've been waiting for foods to start with the letter Q my entire life. Still hasn't happened. Only in the movies.
White Men Can't Jump, right?
Yes.
Wasn't that was?
What is the quiche?
Isn't that the only food that starts with a Q?
There was a quince.
Oh. Excuse me. Anyway. So, our thanks to Randy Moeller for joining us. I wasn't kidding on this. Like, have you seen the NHL draft before, Danny? Have you ever watched it? You could say no, it's okay.
Of course not.
Okay, it's fine. At least you're honest.
I mean, there's only two drafts I've ever watched. The NFL draft, because it's like required watching almost. The NBA draft now, because it's, for some reason, it's become required watching. And it's also the shortest of the drafts.
The NHL draft, see, okay, I describe it to Randy, and if you were listening, I'll just repeat myself, that all, if you go to the floor, okay, it's in, I guess it's at the Canucks Arena, that's what I'm assuming, that it's on the floor there. Okay, in the NFL, you know they have all the tables with
the helmets, phones,
and all that stuff. Okay, now imagine every team has a table, and all the GMs and coaches are at all the tables.
So there's no, like, war room back in...
No,
back.
Everyone is sitting there. You're, like, it's, like, literally a steel cage match with no steel cage and no match. But everyone is just there on the floor. So you better hope that, like, you could literally walk over. If you're the Panthers and you want to make a trade with the Buffalo Sabres, you can probably walk over to their table and converse with them. Everyone is right there in that area.
You could also hear what everybody's talking about.
It's kind of loud, so you got to hope. You got to do the NFL head coach, put your play sheet in front of your mouth so no one hears you, or like in Goodfellas when, you know, you whisper in everybody's ear, you know, you got to do that thing. You can't really like scream out what your plans are.
Is it like the NFL draft in the sense that like fans are sitting in the stands or whatnot?
Twofold. Yes, fans, I believe, can go, but also the families are sitting in the stands. The families of the players are sitting there. So instead of a green room, you're right in the middle of the action. So, like, everyone's out there.
Wow.
And the teams, what they do is Gary Bettman, who's the commissioner of the NHL, he'll make his opening announcement. Everybody's going to boo him. And he will end up then say, okay, the Ottawa Senators are on the clock. Okay. When Ottawa goes up to make their pick, there's like 15 people on stage. it's the head coach, it's the GM, it's the president's kid, it's everyone up there. And usually Dale Tallon will do it for the Panthers, and he'll say, the Florida Panthers are excited to draft so-and-so from so-and-so.
So it's not even the commissioner who comes up and reads the pick. It's,
no,
it's GM.
It's the teams that end up doing it. So you're basically meeting your coaches and your GM and all that when you get drafted. That's not like the NFL that you have to wait and you get the phone call and you just go up there and, oh, hi, nice to meet you. It's all right there.
It's kind of cool.
It is cool. And it's just, it's different. And, you know, they do it that way. It's, and you got to remember that this is a sport or a league that all of these, a lot of the players aren't from the U.S. There are people come from all over the place in the world that are going to this event that, yeah, granted, if it's the second or third round, you're probably not going to be there. But if you're projected to be a first or maybe early second round pick, you're going to be at that arena. And it's just a cool concept. And I know there's a lot of people that don't really watch it, and that's fine. And you don't know the players. I don't know a lot of the players. That's fine. But just the concept of the whole thing is different than the NFL, where a lot more players now, I feel like, don't go to the draft. When you watch this last draft in Nashville, yeah, Kyler Murray was there and some of the other top picks were there. But there were guys that were, who was it? Dwayne Haskins from Ohio State that went to the Redskins. He wasn't there. He was at home.
Well, you know, you got to remember, I think a lot of people have learned from, like, the Aaron Rodgerses of the world, the guys who just kind of, like,
you don't want to be sitting there.
You don't want to be that guy.
But it's cool in hockey that you just kind of hang out there and you're with your family. But, yes, I got to assume it's – well, I guess Aaron Rodgers has the last lap in this whole thing, right? I mean, he was sitting around and he's, you know, a Super Bowl-winning quarterback with the Packers.
Still doesn't change the fact that that's, like, a really embarrassing night. I mean, it's good that you can have the last leg. Like, he probably looks back on it kind of, like, and laughs a little bit.
No, I don't think so. I think he's still pissed off about it.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Like, that sticks with a guy like that. That he's probably, there's no way, even in, you know, you're sitting around and if you have a drink or and you're just talking about it.
But at the same time, K-Rodge, I guess what I'm trying to say is whether he was going to be pissed because he got passed up like that, period. You know, I know Dan Marino's still pissed he got passed up the way he did, but it's just gotta suck that much more having to sit there in the draft room the whole
time.
Now,
are you more pissed because you're passed by teams, or are you more pissed when other teams take quarterbacks instead of you? It can't be you're upset at everyone, because if another team ahead of you, they have a quarterback, like this year, okay? There were a bunch of teams, like, think about this, okay? Like, San Francisco takes Nick Bosa. You can't get upset at them. They have Jimmy Garoppolo. They just gave $120 million to, or whatever it was. I know he's coming off a knee injury, but the point is that when teams have quarterbacks, you can't be up. You only got to be upset at teams that drafted a quarterback ahead of you. Like, with Marino, it's understandable because there were, what, five quarterbacks taken ahead of him?
Yeah, it's ridiculous that both Tony Eason and Ken O'Brien went ahead of him. And
right.
Todd Blackledge.
Yeah, but that's who you get upset about. Don't get upset about a team that, okay, maybe the Steelers, because that's his hometown team, and they went with that offensive lineman who ended up getting the car crash.
Defensive lineman.
Who ended up getting the car crash.
Gabriel Rivera, senior
right.
sack.
So, but I just think you can't say, okay, think about this. If Tom Brady was upset with everybody, he got passed by in five rounds. He got passed by 30 teams five times, six times, you know? And it's hard to say, well, let it go, but my goodness, how many times, like, you won your championships, you're fine.
Well, Brady's a different case, though. Brady was never a highly touted QB. He barely played at Michigan.
I know. Like, but there are guys that that probably say, oh, well, I should have been.
Did Brady even start a full season at Michigan?
I don't think so.
I mean, Kyle Wright probably had more reason to be upset not getting drafted.
I always say about Tom Brady that, you know, there are plenty of players in college that, you can call out a highlight or a game or two. I can't give you one thing from Michigan that he did. And it's sad to say, and it's not a slight on him, but I can't tell you, oh, I remember that game against Wisconsin that he threw this touchdown. I have nothing. I can't give you anything about what he did in Michigan.
Anything. The only reason I know he went to Michigan is because, like, it's on his, like, player card or whatever. I can't remember. I don't remember him in Michigan at all. The first time I heard Tom Brady's name, I was driving around down here, and Jim Mandich was talking about him because we were coming up to play the Patriots. We were coming up to play the Patriots that week, and he had been the backup. I knew that Bledsoe was out. I didn't know the backup's name. And Jim Mandich goes, that kid Tom Brady, there's something about him. I think he might be pretty good.
Well, you remember Jim was a Michigan guy, too.
And Jim was a Michigan guy, too. So I'm sure that was part of that whole thing. But that was the first time I ever heard Tom Brady's name. It was like Tom Brady literally came out of a puff of smoke to become the best quarterback in the history of the NFL. Because you didn't see that guy coming. Nobody, unless you went to Michigan, knows who Tom Brady is.
Well, and the same thing, too, when you look at, I mean, Tom Brady ends up getting this because Mo Lewis fractures or punctures the lung of Drew Bledsoe, whatever it was, with that one hit, and then it changes the whole Patriots franchise for the better. It was the same thing with the Packers with Brett Favre.
Well, Brett Favre was they traded a first-round pick for him. He was the incumbent guy.
No, but he was in Atlanta, didn't do anything there.
Yeah.
He goes to Green Bay, and Don Majkowski's the quarterback, the Magic Man, who I met at a Heat game one time. But the Magic Man, that he ends up getting hurt, and then Brett Favre has got to come in, and then Brett Favre's a quarterback for the next, like, 15 years.
No, but I see what you're saying there. But Brett Favre, again, they traded a first-round pick to Atlanta to get him. He was the guy that they were building the franchise. Don Majkowski was literally just holding the seat till Brett Favre got there. In fact, I'll tell you a story. The week before Don Majkowski got hurt, when it was a game against Cincinnati against the Packers, the week before, the Packers had played Tampa. My dad is a huge Packer fan. So we drove up to Tampa to see the Packers actually play against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Hottest game I ever been in my life. It was at the old Sombrero. It was so freaking hot. That place was like a frying pan with the metal seats. It was so darn hot. The Packers were getting pummeled in the second half of that game. I witnessed Brett Favre complete his first pass to himself in that game.
Who was the quarterback of the Buccaneers? Was that Craig Erickson?
That was still Vinny Testaverde, if I'm not
mistaken.
Was
it Vinny?
Yeah. Vinny had a good day that day, if I'm not mistaken.
And if I'm not mistaken as well, was that Sam Weish? Was he the coach of the Bucs?
Yes, that's correct.
You know what? Sam Weish, obviously, he, you know, him with the Bengals and the NFL films, him yelling. One of my favorite Sam Weish highlights with the Bucs is the logo athletic gear.
Yes.
The shark tooth hat.
Yes.
Remember that? I mean, that was just so cutting edge at the time. Remember who the voice of Logo Athletic was? Or the face of Logo Athletic?
Was it Jimmy?
No. Close. Troy Aikman.
Troy Aikman, that's right.
Troy Aikman had the Cowboys, like that Logo Athletic. It was like cool, but yet
I remember
it was so cheesy.
I remember that Logo Athletic commercial where it was like Charles Haley and like Emmitt Smith. And they were in a car, and Jimmy was hitchhiking or something like that. That I remember.
But they had the shark tooth thing, and then they changed it in the mid-90s to this, I don't even know how to describe, like different colors. And if you saw that in Pro Image, you'd be like, oh, that's a cool hat. I got to get that hat. Because that replaced Zubaz. Like, you know, yes. Zubaz was the first thing. And then you had the starter jackets. But then when you got the Logo Athletic, it was about 90, I'm going to say like 93, 94 to about 96. It was the hottest thing, and then it just died. And then it just went, and then you never heard from them again.
Who was it, speaking of 90s athletic commercial, who was it that Dennis Leary was doing the commercials with Bruce Smith? And we'd be like, bad things, man.
No, Dennis Hopper.
Was it Dennis Hopper? Yes.
Dennis Hopper, it was the Nike commercials.
Was it the Nike commercial?
Yeah, it was the sneaker. Dennis Hopper was the referee. Remember, he was dressed as a referee, and I remember those sneakers. Yeah, he was, it was a big part of that campaign that he did for Nike.
Yeah, that he smelled Bruce Smith's shoe. Bad things, man. Bad things.
Yeah, because he wasn't a creep or anything in speed. We take you up until 10 o'clock right here on 560 WQAM. Radio.com. Radio.
Radio.com. Thing you've got, taking a break from all your worries, sure would help a lot. Wouldn't you like to get away? Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name.
All right, welcome back. We take you till 10 o'clock. Kevin Rogers with you. I know that we don't talk a lot of baseball here, but did you see what happened to Max Scherzer?
Yes.
First of all, Max Scherzer is a very tough individual. If you missed it, Max Scherzer, Cy Young winner, multiple Cy Young winner for the Washington Nationals. Yesterday in batting practice, he took a bunt off his nose. He was bunting, and I'm not going to go on a limb and say that he was messing around. I don't want to do that. But when you see it, it didn't seem very serious. And he caught he goes to bunt. It hits off the bat and then hits him in the nose. Breaks his nose, and the guy ends up pitching tonight. I'm guessing this guy's never bunting again. Runner on first base.
You got to think twice about
bunt
it.
Bunt sign. No. I'm swinging away. I don't care. I'm swinging away. Never doing this again. I'm over it. Not happening. He obviously squared up the run. Like, he did. Like, you could see on the highlight that it was very lax, I guess. But at the same time, he's probably, I'm done with this. I'm going to swing away. I don't care what you say. Sacrifice for the team? No. The nose needs to stay intact. Sorry about that, guys.
You saw this champion Washington Nationals fan. I was looking at him on Twitter. He wore a Max Scherzer shirt it was like literally the whole shirt with his face with just like, you know, the bandages across the nose. And it was just so glorious. You can look it up on Twitter if you want. It's fantastic.
Did he look like the Scorpio killer from Dirty Harry?
Yes.
Okay, good. After his face was all messed up by Harry Callahan. Never mind. I said to myself, I saw someone that looked like the Scorpio killer on a show, and it was on Below Deck. One of the guys on there, he looked like him. I don't know why I always go to that. For some reason, because he stuck out so much, I always use him as like a reference point when I,
when you think of crazy people.
Yeah, I look at him like, oh, he looked like the Scorpio killer. So, speaking of, I think I talked about this with you a few weeks ago, Danny. I saw that Child's Play's coming out. I refuse.
No interest.
Well, it's not even no interest. I don't even want to see the preview. I don't even want to see, like, I'm just not down with it.
I actually learned something interesting because my friend really likes these movies. And apparently there's some kind of like a Hollywood insider thing going on with this. Because the original director, producer of the first Child's Play movie apparently has kept the series going. Like, I thought the last movie that they made would be the Bride of Chucky movie. There was a sequel to that, and there were two more sequels to that. But they're called Chucky movies, because they had to move to, I believe, Universal, who does them now. But the name Child's Play still belongs to MGM, who originally released the movie. So this movie is Child's Play being released by MGM. However, Universal has a separate Chucky series that is the continuing story of Chucky going on.
I read a story years ago, or it was, I don't say the oral history of it. I don't think it was that long, but we see a lot of these, like, oral history of a movie, and you have all the people that get, you know, they give their viewpoints.
Behind-the-scenes documentaries.
Right,
yeah, exactly.
Somewhat like that. And it was about, no, it's probably like on Variety.com or one of those websites. It's about Child's Play. I guess it was like the 30th anniversary or whatever. And it was before, like, this new one came out. And, you know, reading about it, you really get behind the scenes and you say to yourself, like, we are ridiculous. I'm ridiculous as far as I don't want to see this, but yet behind the scenes, they all know it's a doll and they all know that it's fake and we know that, but yet I don't want to see the movie. You know, like, we know all of these, this movement over the last 10 years or so or 15 years of these doll Annabelle or Chucky or what are these crazy dolls that do things that, you know, it's all fake, but yet there's something about a human that does it in a movie and you're like, oh, well, and then there's a doll, like, you know, it's fake, but yet it's still scary.
Well, you know what it is that there are some people that just really, really like horror movies, and there are some people that just don't get behind
That's
it.
That's me.
And I'm the former. I'm the latter. I don't know. Am I the former or the latter here? I just don't like horror movies. It's not my genre. Like, there are some that I can maybe watch if it's not too crazy. I like a good suspense movie, that kind of thing, but not when it's like gore for gore's sake or anything like that. It's just not me. Sorry.
I just don't want to see. Here's the other one too. That, you know how you always hear that if someone kills another person with a knife, like, it's more personal, you know, because if you shoot someone, you could shoot them from 20 feet away, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
But like a knife, you can't kill someone with a knife from 20 feet away. You have to, like, get up close. I feel like that's the only method that he could do it, and it's, like, really getting in there. And I'm like, that's a little too, like, I don't know if it's graphic or...
No, it's just when you think about it, it's very visceral.
It's very, it's very psychotic.
Yeah.
You know, so that's kind of my view, as opposed to, I'd say you shoot someone with a gun, like, it's okay, but, like, it's just very psychotic when it gets to that point.
It's a little more impersonal, and it's one thing when it's like an action movie shooting the guy, whatever. It's the way a horror movie kind of draws it out and kind of viscerally stays on it, and it's just the sound, the crunching. Yeah, no, I understand. It's the way a movie's shot, the way a movie's edited, the way the music is set up creates a different atmosphere in a horror movie, and that can create an atmosphere of killing will look one way in one kind of even stabbing, like if you take a stabbing in a movie like Die Hard versus a stabbing in a movie like Child's Play, they're just going to have two different effects on the audience, because one is going for like a creeping dread and the other is looking for like high paced kinetic action.
Well, and also too, like Steven Seagal, for instance, can get into a room and five goons are want to fight him, and he could kill all of them, like breaking their necks, and you're like, okay, cool. You know, he's not doing anything, and he does the same thing as far as, like, in the movie, murdering them, and everyone's like, okay, cool. Or if, let's just say, even to a certain extent, like Jackie Chan can go in and, like, he fights off six guys, and they're all on the floor. Oh, it's okay. It's fine. But you get to some thing, some character that, like, shouldn't be doing it. Then it's just, it gets a little bit, it's, I don't know, it's, because you, I, it's hard to, I can't even, like, explain what I want to say, but I think you know what I'm saying.
No, I know exactly what you're saying, and I guess what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to describe it.
Yeah.
It's really, like I said, it's just more about the film's intent, and, like, how things are set up, you know, because it's like, you know, when you go, like, it's psychological. When you go into a horror movie, you know that the purpose of the movie is to scare you. You know that its purpose is to feel creepy. So it has that, the word they use in the film industry is called tone. The film kind of has that tone. An action movie's not looking to scare you. An action movie's looking to give you a thrill a minute. So that's the tone of the movie. So even though it might be the same action, it's shot in a different way. The music does something different. Remember, movies are just a combination of music, visuals, how things are shot, lighting, script. You know, it's all about the tone, is really. It's not so much about the action, it's about the tone. And I think that's the tone of the horror movie, is why you and I can't just sit down and watch it and be comfortable, because it's meant to make you feel like creepy and uneasy, and it's supposed to be kind of disturbing. Whereas an action movie is just supposed to be like, oh, he's dead, move on to the next bad guy, you know.
What's the creepiest movie you've ever seen?
Oh, man, the creepiest movie I've ever seen.
Not the scariest, but like one you were just like...
Okay, ugh. My friend made me watch this movie, like Halloween 3. Now, Halloween 3 is very weird because it's not a Michael Myers movie. Halloween 3 is about this weird company that like makes Halloween masks. So like you would go as a kid, and this really freaked me out because I was young too. You would buy the Halloween mask and you'd wear it, and then you'd watch like the commercial for the Halloween mask company. And the commercial would tell you, "Hey kids, put on your Halloween mask now." And as you're watching the commercial, the mask would melt, and like crickets and maggots would start to come out of like the Halloween mask while the kid watched it on TV. And that was so damn freaky to me. Like, it gives me chills just thinking about it.
I mean, for me, I don't know about a horror movie, if I could put in that category, but like one where the way it was shot and it was just so like all over the place was Cape Fear.
Cape Fear was meant to be a suspenseful movie.
No, it was, but I'm saying, but as far as just, I guess De Niro, because he was great in it, but it also was so creepy in it,
yes,
that it's just stuff like that where...
Again, it's like, it wasn't graphic, but it was so creepy and suspenseful that it had you there.
Because I mean, look, I don't love watching horror movies. I'm just not, it's not for me. Like, I don't, you know, there's a lot of people that go out and say that, oh, they don't want to watch movies. They want feel good stuff. No, I don't need feel good. I'm all for, here's what it is. One of my favorite shows on TV, and it gets a little far-fetched at times, but is This Is Us on NBC. And people say maybe they don't like it because it's just a little too much, a little too emotional, but it feels real. Where I feel like horror movies aren't real. Like, they're so ridiculous that I'm not getting anything out of it. I'm just not. I'm not watching afterwards. Let's talk about it. Oh, yeah, did you see this scene when he killed this guy? Like, that doesn't do anything for me. It just doesn't. Like, I'm sorry to say that, but it's just, it's...
You're preaching to the choir with me.
I'm just not... You know, I'd rather watch, and I don't need feel-good movies. I really don't. Like, I like movies that have some sort of realistic aspect to them. But that's just my, that's where I stand on it.
See, it's not so much a realistic aspect to the movie for me as much as, because I can watch a movie that is completely... a complete farce. Like, I'll watch because we've mentioned it earlier tonight. I'll watch a 1960s, 1970s Godzilla movie, you know, and I'll get something out of that too. But what I get out of it is kind of more, I don't know, some kind of a narrative, some kind of like something fun to imagine, you know, something where I can discuss. What I don't like is I just don't like killing for killing's sake. You know, like
Kill Bill. That was one movie I didn't enjoy at all.
Oh, I loved Kill Bill.
Oh, I'm like, okay, we got it. You just killed like Lucy Liu or Uma Thurman just killed 90 people. Okay, I got 90 ninjas. I got it. Okay, like
I like that stuff.
I don't. Because you say kill for like, what was the point of all of that?
Well, she was killing to get revenge.
I understand, but like, okay, do you have to kill? You kill 10 instead of 50.
Well, she had to kill 50 and kill the one she needed.
I don't know that. It's just that one, like.
Yeah, it's a weird line. You know what? I'm not going to sit here and deny it. It's a weird line to cross.
So, anyway. All right. Good talk, son. All right, we're done here. Pharrell is up next. I'll talk to you again on Friday for the NHL draft. So, we'll have 2 hours and then the draft starting at 8 o'clock. So, that is what we got. Pharrell is up next right here on 560 WQAM.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.